Is Washington forcing ethanol upon America? Just how invasive are wiretaps? Are we any closer to an online election? Get revved up for the primaries with answers on the tech behind politics. Plus, find out how to drop the ball this December 31st on a year-end edition of the Popular Mechanics Show.
If you've ever been called a gearhead, speed demon, or asphalt addict, park your bike a sec and listen close. Popular Mechanics and Kawasaki have teamed up to bring you My Bike, an online community just for motorcycle riders, where you can meet other motorcycle enthusiasts, share routes, read exclusive content, and qualify for great offers on Kawasaki vehicles. Sign up today at popularmechanics.com/ridersclub. Kawasaki. Let the good times roll.
Hey folks, and welcome back to the Popular Mechanics Show podcast, your bi-weekly half hour of brain power for expert analysis on the science, tech, home, and car news you need to know first. I'm Matt Sullivan, and in just a minute we'll meet a guru of elections in the internet age to find out why those YouTube debates aren't nearly as important as digital infrastructure leadership. Then we'll talk about the frustrations of getting lost on the way to grandma's for Christmas, and the science behind New Year's Eve. Just so you're set for midnight. But first, to Washington, where President Bush this week signed into law the new energy bill. Last time on the show, we found out why the higher fuel economy standards in this Energy Independence and Security Act of 2007 might get us in for more than we bargained for. But also embedded in the legislation is a major push for corn-based biofuel. Now, everyone wants to save at the pump with next-gen alternative energy. But is ethanol really the answer? Here with some strong words for America's politicians and some more smart solutions for us all is Popular Mechanics Editor-in-Chief James B. Miggs.
The idea is so appealing. We can reduce our dependence on oil, stop sending U.S. dollars to corrupt petro-dictators, stop spewing megatons of carbon into the atmosphere by replacing it with clean, homegrown, all-American corn. It sounds too good to be true. Sadly, it is. Of course we need alternatives to oil. The world uses a cubic mile of petroleum each year, and demand keeps rising as the global economy booms. At first glance, corn seems like a heaven-sent substitute. American corn farmers are the most productive in the world, growing far more of the grain than we can possibly eat, and exporting mountains of the stuff to other countries. And the corn kernel is a marvel of energy storage. Converting that compact bundle of starches into alcohol is a relatively simple trick known to generations of moonshiners. So why not build corn liquor stills on an industrial scale and use the output to power our cars and trucks? That's exactly what this country has been doing for the past several years. Some 134 ethanol plants are now in operation, consuming close to 1.6 billion bushels of grain, about 15% of our total corn production. To feed the ethanol machine, farmers planted almost 93 million acres of corn in 2007, a 19% increase over the previous year, and the highest figure since 1944, when yields per acre were far lower. The result is that the country is now experiencing an ethanol glut. Prices are sagging, as are plans to build ethanol refineries from sea to shining sea. Yet many in Washington seem determined to force still more ethanol into the system. The just-passed Energy Independence and Security Act of 2007, which President Bush has now signed, mandates corn ethanol usage of 15 billion gallons a year, more than three times today's consumption, by 2015. And presidential candidates have outdone each other with vows to flood the nation with ever-increasing rivers of ethanol for at least a generation. It's great that our politicians have discovered the need for new energy technologies. But it appears that Washington is determined to put its money, our money, on the wrong horse. Right now, researchers are studying a host of energy solutions, including hydrogen, high-mileage diesel, plug-in hybrids, radical reductions in vehicle weight, and cellulosic ethanol made from corn stalks, switchgrass, or other non-food crops. It is far too soon to say which of these holds the most promise. But instead of promoting experimentation and competition to find the best solutions, politicians seem ready to declare ethanol the winner. As a result, our nation could wind up with the worst of both worlds, an alternative energy that is enormously expensive yet saves barely a gallon of oil. Let's start with the math. Corn doesn't grow like a weed. Modern corn farming involves heavy inputs of nitrogen fertilizer made with natural gas, applications of herbicides and other chemicals made mostly from oil, heavy machinery, which runs on diesel, and lots of transportation, diesel again. Converting the corn into fuel requires still more energy. The ratio of how much energy is used to make ethanol versus how much it delivers is known as the energy balance, and calculating it is surprisingly complex. The National Renewable Energy Laboratory states that, today, 1 BTU of fossil energy consumed in producing and delivering corn ethanol results in 1.3 BTU of usable energy in your fuel tank. But even that modest payback may be overstated. Skeptics cite the research of Cornell University professor David Pimentel, who estimates that it takes approximately 1.3 gallons of oil to produce a single gallon of ethanol. If the benefits are in doubt, the costs are not. It would take 450 pounds of corn to yield enough ethanol to fill the tank of an SUV. Producing enough ethanol to replace America's imported oil alone would require putting nearly 900 million acres under cultivation, or roughly 95% of the active farmland in the country. Once we've turned our farms into filling stations, where will the food come from? There's a simple reason that ethanol is popular with politicians. Money. Substituting corn ethanol for a large fraction of the gasoline we burn will mean sluicing gushers of cash from more populated states to politically powerful farm states. And a lot of that cash will wind up in the pockets of the big agribusinesses like Archer Daniels Midland that dominate ethanol processing and whose fat checkbooks wield enormous influence in Washington. The fact is, governments generally have a bad track record when it comes to picking technologies. In the midst of an earlier oil crunch, President Jimmy Carter seized on synfuels refined from oil shale deposits as a panacea. Oops. Synfuels turned out to be woefully uneconomic, environmentally disastrous, and feasible only with massive government subsidies. It took years to kill the program off, and the last of the multi-billion dollar tax credits just expired in 2007. The corn ethanol boondoggle threatens to be far, far worse. The current proposals will amount to a huge hidden tax on consumers, with benefits flowing to the politically connected. Once set in motion, such a program will be all but impossible to stop, even if other alternatives, like cellulosic ethanol, turn out to be vastly superior. And every dollar spent on corn ethanol is a dollar not spent on those other, more promising alternatives. So what should the government do? First off, no harm. Instead of trying to mandate specific technologies and risk locking us into using the wrong one, Washington should create incentives to help the market choose the best approaches. One step would be to reward consumers for conservation. There are vast opportunities to make our homes, businesses, and vehicles more efficient, and to make our economy stronger in the process. Perhaps someday corn ethanol will prove itself a viable part of our energy mix. But corn liquor is powerful stuff, and it can make people do strange things. Let's keep it out of Washington's hands.
Thanks, Jim. Joining us now to help sort out our corn-fed boondoggle and look at where all this alt-fuel research is really taking us is the chairman of the Center for Automotive Research and a member of PM's editorial board of advisors, David E. Cole. Dave, thanks so much for joining us in what I'm sure is a busy day for you, Detroit, and all of the automotive industry as we see the energy bill signed into law by President Bush. Now, we just listened to PM Editor-in-Chief Jim Meggs speak about kind of this ethanol fallacy. Do you think we may be pushing biofuels into the system a little too hard from Washington's way?
I think it depends on what you think of as biofuels. Now, my personal belief is that food as a source of fuels like corn, just doesn't do it. It doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of the resource base. I think it's expensive. There isn't the energy balance in terms of what we get out of it to what we put into it that makes a great deal of sense. I think it's driven more, by politics in many respects. And we have to realize that ethanol is a great fuel. It's a very high octane number. It has to be mixed with gasoline to be used in cold climates. But there are issues of how to move it around, how to distribute it, how to blend it. And we're kind of caught up in that problem, chicken and egg problem, but where I would say more than just ethanol, but generally the lignocellulosic biofuels, not the food-grade biofuels, once we get those to a level that are that's economic, we'll solve that problem and it'll become well integrated into our fuel structure. And at that point, then I think the new energy bill is going to be supportive of that.
For sure. Do you think, in terms of the new energy bill, it sets out a lot of pretty intense, ambitious goals. Do we really see Detroit hitting this new 35 MPG standard by 2020?
I think it's doable, and it's very difficult at this point to look at this in some detail until we see the details of the bill.
Right.
And that's not forthcoming. For example, what kind of credit would there be for the biofuels? Is every manufacturer going to face the same standard, or is it going to be a 40% requirement applied to everybody where the average altogether is 35 miles per gallon? And where do cars fit in, and trucks fit into the picture? And that's unclear. This is clearly doable. From the industry's perspective, the reason that they've always kind of disliked a CAFE standard, or this forcing a fuel economy, is that there's no market pull. And the industry for many years has said, well, give us a tax or something that will help encourage people to want to buy more fuel-efficient vehicles. And that's absent here. It's doable, definitely. The question is the customer going to come along? And I think one of the biggest factors here is that the technically more globally sophisticated companies are probably going to gain a competitive advantage here. They'll be able to do this. It's a somewhat easier task for them than some of the companies. And so we could see some real separation occur between the car companies in the world. And it's not necessarily international versus domestic. You're going to see some of both, I think, really probably do fairly well in meeting these standards. It's doable technically, no question. Customers are going to probably pay a little bit more. We're going to have a little more sophisticated technology. But I don't think there are any particular huge roadblocks that have to be overcome here.
But at the same time, there are a lot of people in Silicon Valley and so on and so forth putting their money and their time and a ton of research just kind of starting to build up on these kind of next-gen fuel fronts from cellulosic ethanol and beyond. It's always hard to set a standard, you know, some almost 15 years in advance for what you're going to hit. But what do you see as kind of the next gee whiz phase of all this research into alternative fuels?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's necessarily coming out of the Silicon Valley. I think other places of the world are probably further along.
Of course.
There's great money and a lot of money in the Silicon Valley, and they're smart, and I think they can do a lot of things because they're smart and have a lot of money. But the whole world is working on some of these issues. And frankly, the two critical ones from my perspective are the lithium battery technology.
Sure.
As well as the lignocellulosic biofuels, and it's more than just ethanol. It could be a butanol. It could be biodiesel that is using sort of waste types of material, non-food materials. And in both cases, the forecasts that we're seeing are that by 2020, we'll be in a very, very competitive range with current fuels. And the technology can lead us to do things like the plug-in hybrid. And there's a very important distinction when we're trying to look at the future or the projections into the future. If you require invention, it's very difficult to forecast. If it's an engineering problem, it's a development problem. And in my judgment, both in the case of the biofuels as well as in the lithium batteries, it's a development, it's an engineering issue. And we can be much more confident in a forecast. And I think we're going to see some amazing things happen, frankly, well before 2020.
Well, it's very exciting either way. And whether it's pond scum or plugs powering our cars down the line, Dave, we'll be sure to follow it with you. And we'll probably see some of that stuff at the Detroit Auto Show coming up next month. We hope to see you there.